There is nothing wrong with the internet. Do not attempt to adjust your MTU. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it faster, we will turn on ECN. If we wish to make it slower, we will turn off sliding windows. We will control the QoS. We will control the TTL. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with the internet. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to healthy paranoia. Join yours truly, Mrs. Y, infamous nerd Captain Ivan Pepelnik, and healthy paranoia fan favorite Taylor Banks as we enter the outer limits of intrusion detection with expert and open source contributor Liam Randall to discuss Bro IDS. Everyone, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Liam, why don't you give us more of a background about yourself and how you joined Bro?
I have been working in large, high-performance enterprise environments for close to 20 years at this point. And through that time, I've worked in everything from large gov, large EDU, large enterprise. And the last, 5 or 6 years, I've focused almost exclusively on security. And through that process, I came to know a little IDS called Bro IDS, and it's the most incredible piece of software you've probably never heard of. It's developed out of the University of California, Berkeley, now funded by the NSF, and it has contributors from around the world. It's simply an amazing piece of software, and it's very powerful.
It's amazing. I first heard about Bro probably, I don't know, a couple of years ago through Nova Hackers, and It's about 15 years old. Is that correct?
Yes. The first lines of Bro code were actually written in 1994.
But it's sort of been this best kept secret, just like you said. And it's probably mostly because it used to be a bit daunting to configure and install. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's a fair statement. Bro was originally just this academic research platform. So you'd have these grad students and PhDs from around the world would want to try out, say, how do we do dynamic protocol detection efficiently? So they would write their paper, and they would a lot of them would implement their test solutions and cases in Bro. So you had this world-class research being contributed to this tiny little project that was admittedly a little difficult to use. And as more and more people started to depend on it, specifically the DOE, most of the large research and education networks in the United States, many in Europe as well, people finally started to say that, look, we need to sit down and build that infrastructure like a Jenkins server and, get the documentation in order. And the NSF, which is quite unusual, as they usually just fund research, stepped in with an operational grant. And that was in 2007. And with the release of Bro 2.0 in 2011, Bro became very easy to use. There's packages for all your major platforms. It's rolled into Security Onion now, if you're familiar with that open source IDS distro. And it's easy to compile. It's test compiled every night on most of the BSDs, many different Linux variants. So it's just works now.
Well, it was great. I remember at a Nova Hackers meeting, the eminent Richard Baitlick did this sort of impromptu Bro talk. He was supposed to give like a 10-minute talk. I think it turned into an hour or something. And he was just Richard works at Mandiant, and he was so excited. I think he was foaming at the mouth. It was great, and it got everybody in the community in this area, in the Metro DC area, very excited about it. And I'm really excited to see that it's been rolled into Security Onion, which is a great tool. And we've actually talked and met with Doug Burks on the show before. And I actually upgraded last weekend, and it's actually very doable. It's very easy to use. I was able to use Elsa to view all the logs. I was actually very pleasantly surprised at how far it's come.
Yeah, Bro is simply amazing. And, to separate the tool from the output of the tool, there are Bro integrations that, Bro just writes out these flat log files. It's very Unix-y. So when you're looking at what Bro does, it's really three big things. But the output of Bro IDS is these log files. So we have people that dump them into Splunk, or ELSA is another great example, or whatever your variety of interfaces are out there. We've done a lot of different integrations.
So we're jumping ahead, and let's... I mean, we have a mixture of people, I think, on the call, and this is good. Ivan will keep you honest because I don't. Ivan, what are your general thoughts on IDS?
Oh, it's just an application.
Yeah. Is it an application that makes you happy, or are you? do you like it in general?
Well, you
in
know,
your experience?
It's like voice over IP. It's just an application. It's like three layers above me.
love it.
Wow. Okay.
And you know, everybody knows.
We all know we need something like that.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah,
so
I was joking.
Yeah. So Bro's not. You know, when you think about IDS, you usually think about pattern matching. You know, signature detection. And this is the hardest part about Bro, is really understanding that it's something completely different than that. So Bro by itself, you have to start with the Bro model, and that is this event-based programming for networking. So when you think about, let's say we're going to talk about GUI programming, you would want to know when somebody clicks on a button, right? You would want to say, okay, they clicked on this button, now I can hook that so I can do my thing. Well, in Bro, the idea is that we actually understand and track state of all of the protocols across the wire. You know, so down at the lower level, when you talk about TCP, UDP, ICMP, you get events as those connections are established and torn down. Then at the higher layers, as HTTP requests are made, as MIME types are serviced, streams are transferred, etc., we give you events at that layer. So what it gives you the ability to do is actually interact with your network in ways that, beyond what an IDS is. This is actually why we've just rebranded the project as bro.org, because the IDS monk ear doesn't really fit what we do. Bro IDS is only the first great application written in the Bro networking programming language.
I did notice
that. That's exactly
that.
Why I'm on this call, because this sounds fantastic.
Yeah, and we're going to get to some SDN applications later, which is one of the reasons why I asked you to be on the call, because... when Liam and I were talking at ShmooCon, he said that magical word, that magical unicornish word, SDN, and I just went, wait, what? Because I remember, Ivan, you
Michelle,
and I...
There couldn't be a new product without SDN somewhere mentioned.
Well,
it's the cloud of 2013.
Yeah, well, yes. This isn't new. In fairness to the Bro development, it's not new. It's not a new product, and there... It's, you and I had this conversation at one of the network field days about the security applications for SDN. And I said, we were like, well, how could that work? What could you do? And then when I met Liam at ShmooCon and talked to him about it, he started answering those questions. And I got really excited about that. Well, I'm already excited, but before we get... farther ahead, Liam, why don't you tell us about the basic architecture of Bro in terms of the components?
Sure. Well, let's just divide it into the three different parts. We've got the Bro model, which is this foundation. If you think about a pyramid, this is this wide layer here that kind of describes the general idea of what we're doing. And that is the when you think about what differentiates the Bro ecosystem from other IDS or network programming ecosystems. We start by asking ourselves a different question. Instead of saying, how do you do fast pattern matching, which would be what you would think about in a traditional signature-based IDS, we say, how do we understand all the things? How do we understand everything on the network, and how do we track state? Because when you look at the whole ecosystem, if you spin a backtrack and you look at all the different ways to abuse protocols, services, and so forth, it really makes sense to really be able to drill down and think about, well, instead of just saying, How does this part of HTTP relate to a previous request I've seen? It kind of brings you to this new layer where not only can you interact with the protocols themselves by reading all the different parts and variables of the protocols, but you can then take a step beyond it and do simple metrics and say, well, if the count of say my DNS lookup requests are climbing, or if an application or a workstation makes 10,000 DNS request and only one of them hits, well, that sounds like a DGA to me, like a domain generation algorithm. So you really have to start thinking of at a much higher level and understand the whole stack from top to bottom. Right above that, to service this model, we have the Bro Network Programming Language, which is a couple different parts, but it is essentially a number of custom written analyzers that feed into this event-based architecture that the user, which would be us, we would program in script land. So script land is really simple. Let's say you wanted to write an SSH version 2, version 3 detector because you want to, you know, weed out all the old versions of SSL and TLS that you're not supposed to be using anymore. In our SSL connection attempt record, there's a little variable that says version. So if you wanted to detect version 2 or 3, the code for it would literally just be if version equals 2 or version equals 3. And that's it. You immediately take away all the underlying complexity. You know, Bro will pop all your VLAN tags. It will understand MPLS encoding. We understand all the tunnels, you know, Torito, 4 and 4, 6 and 4, IEA, all of those other tunnels that exist under that, and you just get this high-level event.
So you sort of reinvented Wireshark.
No. Well, okay. So when you think about what Bro does,
he just said no to Ivan. Everybody.
I was teasing him.
No, it's okay. So no, when you think about what Bro does, it is useful to think about the other tools that Bro can not replace, but that Bro can do for you in real time. You know, supports this whole utility model of computing by design. You know, we never expose MPI or any, you know, cluster programming framework to the user. You know, when you need more Bro or when you want to scale Bro to 10 or even 100 gigabits per second, you simply plug more Bro boxes in and all the clustering is taken care of on the back end for you. You don't have to worry about that.
I need to hear more about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I actually didn't even read that part. That sounds exciting.
No, that's pretty cool.
I mean, we've been doing IDS at 10 gig for since 2008 or 2009, which is I think why a lot of these large enterprise environments like DOE and large EDU kind of turned to Bro, because there was simply nothing else for them to use. We were the only choice. But that did give us a lot of. We have this amazing playground of universities and sites that see an incredible variety in traffic. We get asked the very interesting questions years before other people do. The other day, we were actually stumped. Someone came to us and said, "How would Bro handle it if we had a single 40 gigabit per second flow?" And now this was somebody planning on an Internet 2 application, and I think the actual underlying transfer mechanism was grid FTP. But that was a really interesting question. And so that was something that we had to sit down and say that, well, I guess, you know, that whole flow is going to need to go to a single Bro box, which means we're going to need a Bro box that's handling 40 gigabits per second. And that's not something that we can do now, but that's a great example of the kind of things that we're struggling with today, so that 3, 4, 5 years from now, when everybody has a 40 gigabit per second flow on their network, then you know that we've already had that code developed and tested at these major environments.
So why don't we, you know, Liam, you and I were talking earlier, where actually does the decoding of the protocol live in the Bro ecosystem?
So when you talk about, you know, scaling Bro up to these large large data pipes, the model is basically this. Let's start left and we'll head to right. On the far left side, we'll have our data pipe coming in from the internet. Let's say it's a 10 gig connection. And we'll feed that into a load balancer that'll support 3, 4, or 5 tuple load balancing. And these are things like a GigaView, or it could be an Arista switch, you know, running the new test version of OpenFlow 1.2 or it could be like a C packet, something like that. And what these devices will do is they will balance it so a single flow will go to a single pizza box. And if you think, here's our Bro cluster here, we've got, you know, 10 pizza boxes stacked with, let's say they've got 24 cores each. On each core, we will pin a Bro worker, And that bro worker is responsible for handling a flow start to finish. And that same flow needs to go to a bro worker because unlike other IDS applications, we actually track state. So we do that state tracking for the protocols in that flow right there on that one bro worker. And then what it does is it uses all of our frameworks, which are the bro word for libraries. When you use any bro library in programming, then the variables are distributed across the backend. But the worker itself actually is the thing that tracks the state there.
So how is it tracking state? Do I have to send NetFlow data along with being in line, with bro being in line in order to get state?
No. It actually understands each layer of those protocols. I have the privilege of working in a lot of interesting environments, and one of the more stacked environments that I work in would be telco. So I will have circuits here that will take, will have, 802.1Q tag traffic coming off the towers, and then we'll have IPv6 speaking UDP, and in that we'll have a GPRS tunnel protocol, which is a GTP tunnel. Then in that we'll have IPv4. Within that, sometimes we'll have devices that are speaking Torito, like your Windows 7 laptop. So they want a tunnel then, IPv6, and then within that IPv6, you'll have a web request. And Bro will pop all of those headers all the way down the stack, and in the Bro event programming language, in that Bro network programming language, the event that I'll get for that HTTP request is just HTTP request. And if I want to follow the parent all the way down through that stack and say that, well, if this is a tunnel and this is HTTP, maybe notify an operator that somebody's tunneling traffic. That wouldn't be something I think you would typically do, but maybe you do want to do that.
So in order to track state, placement is obviously going to be really critical then.
Yes,
of the bro devices. Yeah.
Typically, your first bro box would be on the border between right before you hit the firewall in your network.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. So
now you've mentioned 10 gig on one hand and 24 cores on the other hand, and then I got the impression that you would need a number of 24 core boxes to analyze a single 10 gig feed.
Right, he said 10 pizza boxes stacked, so.
Yeah, so where are we?
Basically, it will depend a lot on the underlying network that you want to monitor. So if Bro, because it's basically taking all of these packet things and as quickly moving away from that as possible, can be affected by, one, the type of things that you want to do in the Bro networking programming language. For example, if you want to do things that are very computationally intensive, maybe each Bro worker can only handle 100 megabits per second. However, maybe you've got a more traditional network, and each Bro worker then is going to handle 250 megabits per second. So there's a large variety here that we see in operational deployments. And frankly, one of the largest variables that we see is the underlying chipset. These newer chipsets that are coming out with, 16 megabytes of cache on board and, all of these other advanced features tend to help Bro out quite a bit. So there is a big continuum, but we do have dozens of sites up at over 10 gig. One the other day was at, sustained 14 gigabits per second for nearly a full day. That was at university.
And how many boxes do they have?
I think that install tip has 8 boxes on that link right there. But they have, brand new, they have newer hardware. Okay. I've got some old boxes that are, an old cluster I'll think about here that's running on some Dell, R610s or something like that. So that's actually 2 versions ago. To say how old that 10 gig deployment is, they run a sustained 9 gigabits per second, and I think they've got maybe 12 boxes in their rack. So there is this big continuum, but then you have to ask yourself, it's when you think about a parallel to the Snort world or to the Sierra world, is not how many signatures do I want to run, but how computationally intensive do I want to look at these flows. Bro goes really much deeper into these flows, and people are starting to do some of these neat things. Like, you can ask yourself and say that, well, if I have every MIME type here and I have the executable that I just transferred, do I want to look at it further? Do I want to pass it off to something else? Do I want to save it out to disk?
Well, how much memory is required then? I mean, if you're holding state information, am I going to have to accommodate that with much more memory than I would for another typical IDS?
I mean, our our sweet spot really seems to be, and again, there are a lot of variables here, but you know, when you look at the cost value proposition out here, you know, we've got people deploying 24, like today, we have people ordering boxes that have 24 cores and 128 gigabytes of memory. I mean, memory is relatively cheap. When you compare the cost of a 10 gig Bro deployment to the cost of a 10 gig anything else deployment, this is all commodity hardware. So this is all relatively inexpensive.
Okay, that's so fair.
As a rule of thumb, if I would be planning new deployment, you're saying approximately, well, worst case would be 100 meg per core, and then I have to do my own math.
Yeah, I think that that would be if you were doing stuff that is very computationally expensive. I was on a system the other day that's new, and this system, they have one of the those Endace DAG cards in it. And he was doing a sustained, you know, like his flat line was like, you know, 2.5 or so gigabits per second. And so he was doing close to 500 megabits per second per core. But I think that that was more due to the characteristics of his network, as opposed to a network that is busier, or maybe like an ISP that would see, you know, a much larger variety of traffic.
Right. It sounds like the nature of the traffic itself obviously has a pretty big impact on the variability of the performance per core.
And what you want to do on it, too.
Yeah. So let's talk about something that you may want to do. So we have, when you look at your Bro install, you'll see that most of the, in Bro IDS, which is only the first great application written in the Bro networking programming language, you'll have these two directories. You'll have a base directory, which is sort of like our Bro standard library, if you will. Everything in base is loaded by default. And then we also have this policy directory that would give you things that you can do out of the box that have varying degrees of computational impact on your clusters. So an example of that would be we give you the ability to sign all of your SSL certificates back to root. So you could start to do things like, hey, maybe we want to whitelist certain CAs. Like if I ever see a certificate signed by DigiNotar, I don't want to call out, you know, they're obviously dead, but I don't want to call out any other CAs or country CAs that you may want to look for. You know, somebody issuing invalid SSL certificates for your traffic. When you look at that whole SSL universe, for example, there are 651 organizations right now that can sign certificates for anybody. And this is a huge ecosystem. This is, you know, people like Komodo that you've heard of, people like Turk Trust that are under direct control of their government, or, you know, people like Ford Motor Company. All three of those organizations could sign certs for Google, which is kind of scary. And 52 of those organizations are actually under direct control of a government, including the U.S. government. So that's a whole area there in that SSL world where there's not an easy way to do that. You know, you could download Wireshark Ivan, you could extract a PCAP, you could export an X509 certificate, and then you could take OpenSSL and you could ask OpenSSL to sign it all the way back to root and then tell you who the CA was. Or you could enable our script in Bro, and you could do it in real time.
Yeah, I saw a slide somewhere, and I'm going to assume that it was kind of a metaphorical representation, but it somewhat implied that Bro, in a lot of ways, is kind of like the sum of having a TCP dump plus a Wireshark plus a snort plus Python kind of all wrapped into a package of libraries that you could employ.
That's a great analogy.
Mm-hmm. Plus flow data. I mean, you get flow data, too. I mean, so you get it at a high level. You can sort of thin slice the whole thing and just get patterns and trends that you would normally get from a flow collector.
Exactly.
Is that fair? Yeah.
Yeah. So when we get back to, you know, Bro is the best, I think it's the best application you're probably not using on your network now. It's been very frustrating for us, but I think one of the hardest things about Bro is getting that new mental model. And so one of the things that we're, and this is sort of my way of teaching it, is that we say that we have the Bro model, which is event-based programming, this Bro programming language, and then we have our first application that we've written, which is Bro IDS. And Bro IDS is basically will give you three things. It will give you, one, a detailed protocol log for every protocol that we speak. So you'll have these, you know, sort of like, think of it like the overview of what happened for each HTTP flow, the overview for what happened for each DNS request. And these are not as simple as they may sound. For example, on our FTP log, we will actually, as we track state through an FTP connection, we will actually print out the version or the directory you were in. Let's say you downloaded a file. Say you downloaded 1.jpg. When you logged on your FTP server, you changed down the directory tree 6 directories, and you came back up 2, then you went down 5 more, and then you issued your git. Well, when we write our log, we actually reassemble all that for you and just write out the direct link to the current directory you're in when you downloaded that executable. So those logs are actually way more... There's a lot of data in there. And again, by default, they're very Unix-y, so they're very, you know, grep oxed friendly. And when you Splunkify them or ELSA them, it becomes point and click. You know, one click, give me a list of every browser agent I've seen on the network. Second click, group by browser agent. Third click, you know, show me all the hosts that have this particular browser agent. So when you first start running Bro, you'll learn all of these things about your network you probably didn't know were going on. Because we're a passive tap and not, you know, a user agent or a host-based agent, we will actually show you all the things speaking TCP/IP, all the SCADA devices, all the televisions, all the IP cameras. You know, all of those devices are essentially computers, and they all have their own vulnerabilities. You know, you'll see things running old versions of Java that you didn't even think were around your network anymore.
Well, go ahead, Taylor.
All right, I was just going to say, I guess... to me, the integration with Splunk, the integration with ELSA is where this really begins to get interesting, because although for the past 10 years I've probably spent better than 70% of my time in large enterprise as well, you know, I guess I step back and I look at this and say, hey, how does Bro fit outside of these high-performance, large enterprise, large gov, large EDU, large enterprise networks? And it seems like, you know, based on the capabilities, there's certainly a good fit, but getting people to wrap their heads around that is a little bit tough. And for me, even, I mean, my background is security for many, many years. I only really just learned of Bro when Doug Burks came and presented to I run the Atlanta DC 404 group here, mm-hmm. and he came and did a presentation on Security Onion. And so he and Brad Shoup writes the Splunk plugin for Security Onion.
Yep.
They were talking, you know, between and amongst themselves between the presentations, and there was a conversation about Bro. And I said, what's this Bro? So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was going in the same direction, Taylor, and that was there was a PR problem, but also an implementation problem related to the PR problem for
exactly.
a couple of years. And
exactly.
then, so I was so excited to hear, you know, I'm like, oh, man, Bro, such a pain. Two and a half years ago, I'm like, I'll just use Security Onion. And
well,
then
you know,
when it was integrated, I got so excited, and it was literally the biggest problem for me was doing the upgrade of Security Onion, not getting Bro to work, because basically once I turned everything on, all of a sudden Bro's just working.
Right. Well, you know,
I'm excited about that.
And Taylor, you know that. So we've you know, integrating it in. When you talk about how do you deploy Bro on your network tomorrow? Let's say that you're a one man shop, and you've got your 30 hats on. You're listening to this call, and you're saying, "Wow, this sounds amazing. It would be great if I could just turn it on and have it work." Well, download the latest version of Security Onion, have a cup of coffee, and 7 minutes later, it'll be installed.
Yeah,
I think that's what a lot of people listening to this probably are excited to hear. Because you know, I'm not that guy in that shop. I know so many people that are, and that's the cool bit, is to be able to say, hey, here's this wicked cool piece of technology. We're doing, you know, 10 plus gigs for many years in these awesome networks that you could never even dream of running the cables for. But by the way, you can do all this amazing stuff too. Just download this ISO.
Yeah, what if you just need it? And if you just need it in a pinch, or you want to prove to C-level management that yes, open source is not bad. Open source is actually very robust. You could just put it on a laptop, plug it into a tap, and you know, or a SPAN port, and just show them what you can do, an instant demo right there. I guess the other question I have, Liam, so we talked about that you can obviously look at the logs with ELSA, you have Splunk integration. Are there any commercial products that I can send this to a dashboard, to a central correlation device that's a commercial thing that would integrate well in an environment that somebody already has? Because they've purchased this product.
Yeah, I've used so many of these different products. What's the one from HP here that, God, I'm having a total brain fart. We have a lot of people out there that use the, it's not QRadar. It's one of those other giant ones. At the end of the day, you know, Bro can be integrated into nearly any type of, you know, log management system. You know,
you send syslog to these devices, and
A lot of these devices can be set to import, you know, whatever the logs are. You know, in Splunk, we use the Splunk import, you know, daemon. We actually have a native Elasticsearch writer. So I don't know of anybody that has done Bro with Greylog 2, which is a great open source project. We have our own Elasticsearch product called Brownian that's developed out of Carnegie Mellon University. So we try to be as flexible as possible. And the big thing that I want to emphasize here is that we also definitely try to separate the tool itself, Bro, from the output of the tool. You know, and what you do with it once we write out these logs, or where you write your logs out to, is probably an entirely different show. But Taylor, to go back to your point, Elza, which is developed by Martin Holstay, a brilliant developer who's now over at Mandiant, Elza is included by default in Security Onion. So you get all this MapReduce functionality out of the box with that toolkit.
Yeah, that's also pretty fantastic. And like I said, interestingly, although I've been a fan of Splunk for a while, this was actually kind of my first introduction to Elza. I was kind of a little ashamed that when these guys started talking about the tools that they were new to me. They were talking about Bro and Elza, and I said, "Hey, what's Bro and Elza?" But a couple of really powerful pieces of software that I think are really starting to find their way to the masses now.
Yeah, as a side note, I have tried putting together Elza on my own before. I've tried compiling all the pieces and parts, and I was, you know, it can be a bear. If you're not doing it on just the right flavors of Linux and everything else, it can be very daunting. And then I was so excited that now everything just is working really well outside, you know, right from the Security Onion distro. It just works. And I was so happy because, you know, in most cases, what you're going to find is somebody may just need this to start with to solve a very specific problem, which is why I was trying to get Elza up about a year ago.
Right.
And, you know, then now you can just pop in Security Onion and you've got all these tools. I just put it off that port. I hang it off a span port and all of a sudden I get what I need. You know, it's great.
Security Onion is kind of it's almost a backtrack of defense in a sense.
I agree.
You know, I mean, there's nothing that you won't find there if you need to do effective network defense.
You know, one thing I would also emphasize, though, is that I highly recommend people get a hard tap as opposed to a, using a span port.
I agree. I totally agree. But in a lot of cases, not in most, but in there are going to be very many cases where you don't have the tap in the right place, or you don't have the money for taps. You haven't convinced management. You're a really small shop, and you haven't been able to convince management to buy taps.
There's a company out there called Dualcom that has taps for under $300. You know, they have a gigabit tap, and they're great. They're USB powered. You know, I don't know that I would run my enterprise on it, but it's what I put in my jump kit. Like, I literally have one in my backpack. You know, they're pretty affordable these days. And because here's generally what we see. You know, when you say that, okay, well, when you make a recommendation, what's the hard data behind it? Well, a lot of times what will happen is you'll have your Cisco switch or whatever device you have here, and you're trying to do too many things with it. So you're configuring all these access control lists on it, and the CPU utilization will get so high that your span port will actually not be getting all the packets. Bro actually has a little TCP log in there that will tell you, it will track and guesstimate. It'll say, well, I'm missing these packets here, so we're losing data. And every 15 minutes, it'll write out an estimated percentage of data loss. It'll actually extrapolate that across all of your, you know, UDP and ICMP traffic and say that, well, even though in UDP I don't really know that I didn't get something, I can kind of guesstimate that overall on TCP I'm seeing, say, 1%, 2%, or 3% packet loss. So let's say that this is our total loss for this sensor right now.
That's pretty sweet that it tells you that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
that's really awesome. I'm liking Bro so much that I want to take it behind the high school and get it pregnant. I just have to say.
it sounds like it's perfect for solving problems yet unknown, and that's a pretty remarkable capability that, you know, in and of itself, it's kind of a tool for solving problems.
That's exactly it, Taylor. And that's why I think that Bro IDS by itself, you don't have to do any scripting or programming to get all those detailed protocol logs or detect these heuristics we have built in right now. All of that comes out of the box in Bro IDS. But the thing to be most excited about is definitely that programming language. You know, the things that are yet to be built when you think about from a compliance perspective or from just dynamic or active response. You know, we're passive, but in my ShmooCon presentation and up on my GitHub, I did a little update Twitter bot, because what I wanted to put out there was some simple code to say, okay, step one, have Bro detect something. So in this case, I told it to say that whenever there was a login over SSH that we can, you know, kind of heuristically detect from the flow data, then go ahead and do something else. I just called a Python program. So in the ShmooCon video, which is up on YouTube, I went ahead and had Bro update Twitter. So I think that's a stupid example. It's terrible. You would never do that in reality. But that gives you, the user that wants to have Bro now, you know, put an access control list in place. Or because you've just detected somebody running an outdated version of Java, move someone to a remediation VLAN. Have them change their state on your NAC. You know, whatever it is you want to do, there's an example. There's an example, you know, code segment for. You need to do your custom magic, and 2, 3, 4 years from now, I think we're going to have tons of these custom integrations out there as people start to get in and explore this. But for right now, it's all right there at your fingertips.
So if I go to the Bro site, am I going to see lots of community examples of some of what you're talking about?
So the best example of community contributions is going to be to git clone Bro, and we have our own Git tracker that's also cloned on GitHub. And if you go to our quick start guide right off of bro.org, you'll find the instructions for doing this, and is to look at what we currently have in master. What we put the things in master that are, again, we divide them into the base, that Bro standard library, and the policy, which is sort of the things that you need to decide. It's what is your policy for different code and frameworks. Up on GitHub, I think right now we're the 78th most popular language out of 87, but there are a number of us up there, including Scott Reynolds, myself, a brilliant guy, he's an EDU administrator named Justin Hall, and a bunch of doctors from around the world, you know, a girl at Oxford, a grad student out at Berkeley, you know, who are putting all these neat little modules out there. Seth Hall, the day after the APT1 report, put out an APT1 detection routine, which was, Bro is, I think, the best case for consuming intel. Mandiant put this intel out here, and there's other open source intel sources out there. But what we do in Bro is we give you the ability, because we go deeper, to use that intel more effectively. If we have a DNS name that we want to track for, we look not just on DNS requests and replies, but we look in the HTTP host header. We look within the X509 certificates, which are the certificates exchanged whenever there's an SSL or TLS connection.
Liam, let me ask you... Michelle.
No, go ahead.
I know. Quick question, but would Bro be useful for post-mortem analysis? So, for instance, can I feed PCAP files or daemon logger output directly to Bro and use the capabilities of the Bro scripting language and the Bro application to then parse and understand, you know, state as it's happening in a post-mortem file?
Absolutely. And here's a great use case for that. That new Lucky 13 SSL attack, Taylor. I talked to the authors, and I got them to give me a PCAP. So what I do is that when I get a new attack or when I want to analyze an event, I just call Bro from the command line. I'll type bro-r and then my PCAP file, and that will load Bro, and it will replay that PCAP, and then it will write out all those logs. And then using the Bro scripting language, what I do is I basically use that as an opportunity to implement my detection heuristics. You know, the idea, I think, in Bro is that, you know, we can do signatures, but that, you know, for every signature out there hacking away at the leaves of evil, there's this greater heuristic that can identify it at its root. So in that Lucky 13 example, when I looked at it, there was, I use these things I call the fire scripts. They're up on my GitHub. And what they do is they'll just print you off a little table, and for each protocol, they will show you a count of the, you know, state transitions for each event. So in SSL, the state transitions would be SSL connection attempt, SSL connection, you know, established, you know, and so forth. You can actually look and see what they all are. But when I looked at that attack and replayed it through BroTailor, what I saw was, you know, 8,000 connection attempts and zero connection completions. Right. So I was able to iteratively develop a pretty accurate heuristic, first to detect SSL anomalies, which I would then write out through the log, and this is all up on GitHub. You can see it up on my account there. And then to use that heuristic to then enable a second detector that looked for something specific to nail it as Lucky 13.
So I want to point out to people listening, this can be as simple or as complicated as you are willing to make it. That's the cool thing about Bro, that you can take it, you can start out very, very simple with just everything out of the box, but you can take it slowly to the next level, by going to GitHub, by through the community contributions, and get much more in depth than just out of the box. But right out of the box, it's going to do good.
I'll also say, too, one of the things that also immediately grabbed my attention, and being a bit of an open source zealot, I got to say, the fact that it's BSD licensed is also pretty awesome, too, because it means, you know, if you've got a commercial organization and you want to do something with Bro that you don't feel like you need, want, or are able to contribute back to the community, you're not prevented from doing so. So, there's a lot to be said for the open source nature and yet the freedom that is enabled by BSD licensing.
Yeah. I mean, there's that level that, on the core team here, you know, you get these, you know, we got this sort of Berkeley influence here, and we sort of all already subscribe to that zealotry of, you know, open data and information and code needs to be free, and it needs to be out there. And that is something that we are absolutely committed to do. One of my favorite things to do is watch other Bro developers do their daily commits into the public repo. You know, this is all developed in the public. And if you want to come in and, you know, take a look at some of the branches and see what's being developed for Bro 2.2 and Bro 2.3, well, it's just git checkout branch name, you know, and you can start running, you know, live. You could start testing out, you know, the various detection routines and analyzers that we're working on.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
So Liam, if I go back a bit to your example, so you said you identified this particular attack by the aggregate number of connection attempts.
Yes.
Now, if I have a cluster of machines running Bro, then obviously the flows would get distributed across different machines. How do I manage that total count of attempts across the cluster?
Ivan, it could not be a better question if you were a plant. I mean, that is just perfect segue.
Well, what do you know?
That's perfect. I love that question because I'm going to crush it here. Okay, so
he has way too much energy for this time of the morning, Taylor.
Yes, agreed.
I have little kids. I've been up for a while. This is almost like, you know, noontime for most people for me. Okay, so how do we count things? How do we track state across all these different Bro workers? So let's say you've got, you know, 6 pizza boxes with, you know, 10 cores on each, all devoted to Bro. And so that would be 60 Bro workers here. Well, when you look at our frameworks, which is our fancy name for libraries, when you use our libraries developing scripts, you don't have to know anything. You just say that it's currently called in Bro 2.1, it's called the metrics framework, but in Bro 2.2, I believe it may be an area of contention, but it will be renamed to the measurement framework. Let's say you want to measure the count of something, or the average, or the sum, or whatever it is you think about your global variable that's global across all of my workers here. All you do is just specify what you want to count, and then we handle that for you on the back end. We shovel that data back around and coordinate through all the workers to a master node. And in the future, I can see some improvements coming here, you know, in a future version of Bro that will give you, the developer, if you want to write these Bro scripts, the ability to say something like, well, you know, fire off this script or write this notice when I hit a hard count of 100. And that needs to be, you know, that variable needs to be updated within a second between all of my workers. Or maybe to have less of an impact, when we talked about the computational impact on your Bro workers depends on the script you're running, to have less of an impact. You might be able to say in the future, you can't say it now, but right now we do everything in real time. You might say that, well, you know, when you get about to 100, you know, just update this variable every 60 seconds. And that would give the bro worker the ability to, you know, not stop what it's doing right now to update this other variable.
So, Liam, what's the clustering type of software that's being used underneath for Bro? When you have, we're talking about clustering of multiple Bro systems. What's it using for that?
So we are using, you know, a custom designed clustering mechanism. You know, Bro has these real academic roots. So if you go back and look through all of the Bro papers, you know, years ago, 2001 or 2002, whenever it was, one of the researchers did a paper about, you know, how do I track things across clusters for security events? Or, you know, I don't know what the name of this specific paper was, and you can actually go and look at the code. We could, again, it's free BSD, all the code's out here. You know, we could pull it up and review it if we want, but I don't think we'll have time to do that on the show today.
No, that's okay.
I'd like to.
I'm sure Ivan would too, yeah.
That would be
no,
funny,
Yeah, I was just curious because this is running normally, so you're either going to run Bro through Security Onion, which is not BSD, obviously. It's if I have multiple Security Onion boxes, am I going to get the same benefit as running it? Can I cluster Bro?
So if you were going to deploy it using Security Onion, each Security Onion node itself would have its own Bro cluster. When you run through the Security Onion install script in the beginning, if the script detects that you have multiple cores, it will ask you how many Bro workers you want to run, and it will set it up locally there. What you would not get is you wouldn't get 10 Security Onion boxes stacked. You know, would give you 10 different outputs of logs and would not be coordinating between each other.
But you could configure one of the clusters on one of those implementations and presumably just set or configure the remaining, Bro agents, if you will, or Bro workers, right, to just feed information back to a single cluster. In other words, you could probably, I would presume, with relatively small configuration changes, create kind of an N+1 cluster using Security Onion nodes.
Yes.
Could you not? Okay.
Absolutely.
A lot of people would probably go that route because of the time to a working solution rather than building everything from scratch.
How are you doing this? So are you just telling the workers? Are you telling everything to send it back to a central Bro box?
The configuration is actually really simple. You basically just point Bro workers at one box, and that's it. You know,
from now on that anytime there's a Bro cluster, we're going to call it a bromance?
We can talk about bromance and stuff. We can do that.
You guys, that is so cool. Okay,
this is actually a new record. It's been 47 minutes into the recorded call before the first break.
No, I mean, because that's going to come up. I mean, are you guys looking at, is the Bro development team looking at maybe making that a little easier in terms of, say, you didn't want to have the whole, not that you wouldn't. I mean, I love Doug and I love Security Onion, but what if you wanted to have just a live CD kind of bootable Bro, you know, very simple out-of-the-box kind of install? Are you guys working towards that, developing that, so I can build that cluster much more easily?
So if you wanted, like, I think you're talking about Brocurity Onion here or something along those lines.
You know what would be great to have the standalone Bro distribution as part of Security Onion?
Yeah. Should we talk to Doug?
I deploy Security Onion, and I also get this embedded distro that I could just deploy on other boxes to scale out my cluster.
I'm a bit of a keep it simple, stupid type of guy, but I'm thinking that we could probably work together, put our heads together, and have a script that would toggle Bro between, you know, centralized Bro server with Bro controller on this box, or I'm just a worker bee.
You know, Taylor, I'm on the Security Union dev list. I would say we accept contributions.
But I'm just thinking rather than forking a whole other distro or a Brocurity Onion or anything else, I'm just thinking, you know, kind of a and I'm sure that I'm greatly oversimplifying this, but I would have to imagine that the conversion from being a standalone bro implementation to I'm a bro worker and here's my other bro is probably a relatively trivial set of changes to the configuration.
It is. And it's also, I think, worthwhile to note that, you know, that we publish packages right, you know, right on our website for all the major architectures. So if you want to install, you know, I think the easiest way to install Bro is to pick whatever your corporate OS is, because an issue you run into with Security Engine, for example, is that it's Ubuntu, and Ubuntu is not disestig, which is, you know, which means that on the U.S. federal side, it will not be signed off on for use, for official use within federal agencies. Now, I know for a fact it is used all over the place because, you know, we talk to these people all the time and everybody loves it. I love Doug. I contribute to the project. I hang out in Security Engine all day. But some people have other challenges where their environments are such that they need to run things like SE Linux. Or they really are looking for the performance characteristics of a BSD flavor. So in that case, I really think that, you know, installing Bro now from package or from source is minutes. You know, and this is an apt-get install or RPM, you know, whatever your flavor is. It's not, I don't even think that at a certain level, at a 10 gig, you know, if you're setting up a 10 gig cluster here, I kind of think that there's a prerequisite that, you know, you could start with your base OS and then just install the packages, or I think the better option is just to just build from source.
Okay, I have a question that we got to talk about virtualization possibilities. So is anyone putting Bro in a VMware environment?
You know, they are. I mean, I know a couple people, at least more than a couple, that run a Security Engine completely virtualized. But at the, you know, to scale to these really, really high speeds, I really think the best deployment option is going to be directly on hardware.
Well, are you doing anything to, are there any options in terms of capturing traffic within the virtualized environment? Do I have to physically capture on the wire? Are you guys, is there any possibility of you integrating with OpenStack or Xen or something like that to hook into the hypervisor?
You run into a couple options when you're talking about capturing at insanely high speeds. You know, the big one is performance. You know, when you want to capture at 10 gig or whatever the case would be, or process, even at 1 gig, you know, these become, you know, real challenges there. And having direct access to the hardware is very helpful. There is a project out there that they have a virtualization, like a zero copy mechanism for virtualized environments, that if somebody wants to look into this, I would recommend that you look into that as well, because one of the largest performance impacts is going to be, you know, when you get down to this workstation level or the server level where I have all my bro workers here, is how do I move things efficiently from the network interface to the place, you know, to PF ring, for example, where then my bro workers can pull their flows. So if you look at the PF ring project, I think it's up at ntop.org. Those guys sell for $20 a virtualization license. I have not used it, so I have no idea how well this works. I deploy my bro, you know, workers on very inexpensive commodity hardware, because for me, I want bro as close to the traffic as possible. But that being said, I think that project does look like it has a lot of promise, and they basically have like a PF ring that works for virtualized environments.
Yeah, and keep in mind that there are two totally different use cases. So obviously, if you want to see everything that comes in or goes out toward the internet, you would need a hardware box, especially at reasonable speeds. But what Michelle was probably more leaning toward is the case where you just need to see what a certain VM is doing.
Exactly.
In a lower throughput environment like that, Ivan, I think that's a very reasonable option. So here in my office, I have probably 12 or 14 different bro boxes spun up, and they're all VMs.
But what I'm looking for is I want to know if there's any potential for hooking into the hypervisor, where I look at the traffic there. I don't wait for it to hit the wire, because I don't want to see it trombone out to a device or even to another virtual. What if, you know, I'm looking at, so there are all these potentials, these devices coming up that are hooking into the hypervisor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, introspective firewalls, everything else. I'm wondering if the Bro team is looking into anything like that.
If Bro can see the data, so if you're going to tap it at, you know, some virtual switch layer and pass it to me, then we're already there. I think that one of the big things that we try to have in the Bro, like, is in the Bro development team, is a to-do list and a not-to-do list, which I think that when you think about, you know, as some of the edge cases of use, you know, we really try to focus on this sort of, how do we tackle the biggest data problems first? That's at the top of our to-do list. And not that, you know, some of these sexier SDNs are, you know, not some of the future largest use cases out there. But we're really focusing on, you know, how do we build the programming language, put more analyzers in there and things like that. And then we could say the testing the different use cases may fall under a different hat.
Okay. Well, so you mentioned SDN. Let's start talking about SDN integration and what the potential is for traffic engineering based on security needs. Is that...
So the conversation that Ms. Y, myself, and there was a Nebula developer out there, at ShmooCon, we all sort of had this amazing little conversation was, and now if you're not familiar with Nebula, they're doing OpenStack. You know, basically, I think they're going to rack and palletize, you know, basically these giant racks of clusters. And there will be a controller at the top, and you can kind of spin up. If you need more accounting, well, then it spins up more accounting nodes. If you need more, you know, web servers, then it spins up more web server nodes. And the conversation kind of went like this, is that because Bro gives you this unparalleled look into your traffic and into what's actually going on, you know, you may want to think about using Bro to drive your SDN. If you think about what the feedback loop would look here is that, you know, Bro would be in a spot to basically tell you what is going on in the wire, and you would implement your own metrics, whether it's just the count of this or the, you know, the average of this or, you know, the total number of SSL connections. Let's say you've got a VPN appliance in your sort of SDN here or something like that. Maybe at what point, at what threshold would you want to spin up more nodes? And it was sort of being using Bro to dynamically drive these other backend devices, which is, I think, a wonderful use case for Bro because you're looking at all the traffic. Whereas from one of these individual virtual nodes, you're only looking at a single node.
Ivan, I'm waiting for you to weigh in.
Oh, no, that was exactly the comment I wanted to make when Liam was explaining that idea about the Twitter updates.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, so what if I replace the Twitter updates with sending mod flows to an OpenFlow controller?
Exactly. And Ivan, the whole reason I put that Twitter demo out there was, and I thought very carefully about that. I almost put out a Google Caprica integration out there. Which Google Caprica is a piece of software that Google apparently uses to drive their internal creation of access control lists between their their configuration management for their switches and routers on their backend data centers. But I really did not want the discussion to become about that. I didn't want it to turn into, oh, Bro is designed to drive switches and routers. I really wanted to put something so ridiculous out there to just say that, do something in Bro, detect something in Bro, and then do whatever you want. Because if you're updating Twitter, I think that that's a pretty good example of do whatever you want out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So the SDN controller would then make the decision based on Bro, or Bro would then inform the SDN controller? Which way?
Michelle, you have to insert the glue.
Mm-hmm.
So you detect something and you want to react on that. For mm-hmm. example, you you detect someone who tries to break into your network using whatever, and you decide that the proper response is to install a temporary access list at the edge router to stop him, so you start dropping all his packets, for example, whatever you do.
Yeah, so Bro's going to, if I'm doing it this
Bro
way...
Bro is going to generate an event that will tell you something weird is going on.
Right.
And then you have to write an event handler that will say, okay, if this is going on, this is my response. And extract things like source IP address, destination IP address, port number, right. and so on from Bro variables. And use that to build the flow record. And then your script would have to turn around and talk to whatever OpenFlow platform you have, saying, or 1PK, or NetConf if you have Junos or what have you. So there would be a lot of integration glue to, you know, spread around. And then you would say, okay, now I want this particular box to install that particular access list or flow entry or whatever the mechanism is to stop that intruder.
Yeah, I see the potential here, though. This is
but the hard work is yours.
Yeah, I know.
You know, Ivan, I think that there's an opportunity here to leverage existing projects, though. You know, Google Caprica is the one that I mentioned previously, where I think that the hard thing is you know, dynamically, and so Bro, you know, dynamically detects these things for you, and then you would want to chain that to something else. And what you've described, Ivan, this is one of the big motivating reasons for us renaming. You know, when we started Bro IDS in 1994, the ambition was pretty small. But now, you know, we kind of realized all these other things that can be built out of it. You know, you're like, we just described this fictional product that does not exist called Bro SDN, right? Or something along those lines. Or Bro, Net, if you will.
Okay. Bro SDN! This,
neither of these... Cloud. Bro Cloud SDN.
Yes, none of these products do not exist. These are fictional things that we're talking about right now. However, we do have one large DOE facility that does do active response. So what you described, Ivan, you know, dynamically inserting access control lists, there is a very gigantic network that is doing that right now. And so, that's something that we kind of have in our back pocket as a, you know, this works, it's amazing. And we need to test this more before we put this out there for other people.
So what do you say? Are you saying, can you talk about this more?
I can talk a little bit about it, sure.
Okay, so you're saying, what is it, the DOE is doing this? Department of Energy?
It's a certain facility someplace that is very large. A lot of IP addresses, a very large network. I mean, they're well beyond 10 gig at this point. And
okay,
this site loves Bro. They actually do... They not only have Bro at their border and their gateway, but they have this idea of what they call Deep Bro, where they put Bro, further into their network. You know, for example, they have a Bro box right in front of their internal DNS server because they want to do those intel matches not recursively. That, you know, let's say that a user gets infected and they try to reach out to, you know, badc2server.com, right? Stupid name, but hopefully you get what that means. So, you know, typically if on the border, what you would see is you would see your recursive DNS server doing a lookup to that, and then you would need to in turn pivot to your recursive DNS server, and you would say, okay, well, who actually made that lookup to badc2.com because I need to go and remediate them. What they have done is, with this internal Bro, this Deep Bro, or whatever you want to call it, they are basically, when they catch intel there, and they can say that Ivan, your workstation has Configer on it, or Zeus, or whatever, let's go ahead and move you right to remediation VLAN. They do that. They also do things like drop access control lists.
How are they doing that? Are they actually using SDN, or...?
They're an all Cisco shop, so they have basically some custom glue that they've done, that they've just kind of put together. And, you know, one of the early problems that they started to hit was they started basically using every access control list on their box. So they had to make some changes in their network. Well, you know,
what I wanted to point out, that if you do this, you know, blindly, you'll run out of TCAM in seconds.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
this is why we don't have these things out there in the public. There are these questions that we still need to answer. So, Ivan, as an example, the Mordo worm last year, you know, the RDP worm, they were, to my knowledge, the first people to detect that. There was a MySQL worm last year. They were the first people to detect that because they watched their daily routes and they were like, oh my God, why did we just block 10,000 workstations on 3389? You know, and they started to look at some PCAPs and they would see this crazy worm going on.
Wow.
And they actually have discovered a bunch of other things that aren't public yet. Running Bro in this fashion is sort of like you know, connecting the IFC Storm Center directly to your brain. You know, it gives you don't just see, you know, peaks of scanning. You actually see the events, the underlying events that are happening in that scanning. You know, what is actually going on underneath that? And then when you weaponize it, you're suddenly seeing all of these new metrics out there.
Bro, so, Liam, deep. It's like IDS on acid.
So, Liam, you were talking about some interesting new applications of Bro. We were talking about using it as a spear phishing detector. And I really liked when you were giving me that example the other day, and I thought that was really cool. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, actually,
I want to hear more about this. Yeah, that's
so at NOVA, the Northern Virginia Hackers, this past Monday, I actually did a talk on Intel consumption and generation in Bro. And that talk will actually be on YouTube Monday. So I signed off on it last night. My friend that runs the Compute Cycle blog actually did the recording for it. He's out in the D.C. area. Brett Thorson, he's a great guy, very bright. And what I did, I talked about, okay, so we've kind of sketched out, okay, that Bro's the best way to consume your intel. Okay, so this consuming means that you have intel and you want to test it in more places, because we look deeper into the protocols. You can look inside your X509 certificates for hits. You can look inside the actual HTTP traffic. You can look inside DNS, you know, et cetera. And we're going to go deeper. But the example that I gave was using the Intel framework. And what the Intel framework does is it kind of takes a different point of view. And it says, okay, well, on all the data I have coming into my network, shouldn't I be generating intel? When you think at a high level, what is happening in spear phishing? An outside user is inserting a URL or a program into your network that's going to make a call out. So if let's take a basic example and say for every inbound email, let's scan every email and just keep a list of all the URLs that are set to my company. And we'll just load that into a vector, you know, think of it like an array in Bro. And then on the way out on all the protocols, HTTP, you know, FTP, whatever, I will look for some user to then make a hit, and then I could fire a little notice and say that over via SMTP on the way in, we received a link to badc2.com. And then an hour later, you know, a user, Taylor clicked on that link in his email, and then he, over HTTP, and he went out and connected. And in reality, in Bro, we'd also see some pretty other serious indicators. For example, you may see, like, I have never seen a user agent for HTTP. I've never seen Java downloading an executable be a good thing. That is always a bad thing.
Well, and I always click on suspicious links. So, you know.
No, I mean, this is exciting. It's very flexible in terms of some of the... When you told me this the other day, I didn't get to go to that Nova Hackers meeting, but now that I know it's on video, I'm so excited. Make sure you give me that for the show notes. I'm sure everybody will want to go check that out.
Absolutely.
Ivan, I think you had a question.
Yeah, well, a few, and they all have to do with load distribution. So, Liam, you said initially that you need something like a load balancer or a switch or something that would use the five tuples to distribute the traffic to a cluster of Bro boxes.
Yes.
So, obviously, the performance of the whole thing depends heavily on the load balancing algorithm of that thing. If that thing starts sending all the traffic toward one box, you're sort of host, right?
You know, operationally, we've done this enough that, I mean, that's kind of a solved challenge.
Okay, so do you have any, like, best practices recommendation how someone could approach that?
So I would say that the easiest thing to do is to work with a vendor that's done it before. So some of the devices that CPacket sells, for example, were pretty much custom designed by the Bro team years ago. You know, they're this amazing all-in-house engineering fab out on the West Coast. They're actually very inexpensive, relatively speaking, for this space, and their products just work. I think the more exciting thing, Ivan, that sort of dovetails with one of your areas of expertise, though, is OpenFlow-based installs. Arista right now. Arista right now is if you look at the draft specification for OpenFlow 1.2, which is the next generation, it actually includes this five-tuple balancing built in. So what that's going to do is that is going to allow people to buy these $15,000, $20,000 top of rack switches, drop them in, and then use them as a five-tuple load balancer to all of your applications out there. You know, whether it's Snort or Bro or whatever the case would be. And that to me is the area where things get really sexy really quick.
Now, I don't need OpenFlow for that. I mean, even today, I could just take one of those switches and create default routes pointing to all the Bro boxes.
So you're gonna balance by a subnet?
Well, no, but you have multiple equivalent routes, and all of this, let's say top of rack switches, they can do a five-tuple load balancing.
Okay. Okay,
but that's as good as your statistical distribution of traffic is. That's the problem.
You know, so the only time right now on our major installs, and I'll say major is anything 10 gig or higher, that we see any hotspotting like that, is there is we have one deployment that's actually you can look at up at openflow.org. You can go and watch a lot of videos about how they did it, and the talk is about Indiana University's IU's deployment for their security mechanism. Now, in that version of OpenFlow, they were basically balancing their traffic by subnets. And they do get some hotspotting, as you kind of describe. To my knowledge, though, none of the guys that are doing the five-tuple balancing right now are seeing any hotspotting on their systems.
Yeah, well, you would only get hotspotting if you would have elephant flows.
Yeah, that would make sense, and that would sort of be that question that we talked about earlier, where we were saying that a question that stumped us was, what happens when I get a single 40 gigabit per second flow? And, okay, and that would be at that insane end of I2 and what they're doing at the various testing places.
Or if you get four or five gig flows that just happen to land on the same box because their five tuples just hash into the same value.
Yeah, I think that's a distinct possibility, yeah.
Yeah, well, it does happen in practice, but luckily not too often. So the other question is, how do you spread the load internally between the cores?
So when you get down to in between the cores there, you've got OpenFlow and AF Packet actually include the mechanisms for balancing out these flows. From the Bro perspective, I will give Miss Y a link to the actual files, because you're actually the second person to ask me that. I was out at working with CERT the other day on a project, and some of their engineers actually asked me the exact same question. And I thanked them for the opportunity to learn the answer to that. So I actually just wrote them an email, and I sent it over to them. So I will take that and show you exactly. There are only three places in Bro where we do anything special. Other than that, we lean on what is being done internally by PF Ring and AF Packet. Bro moves away from packets as quickly as possible.
Okay, so you're using PF Ring as the underlying layer.
Yeah, or AF Packet, or I think if you use one of those end-based DAG cards, I think that they actually install their own, some heavy customizations to that layer to speed up performance. But essentially, that is outside of the Bro box.
So actually, one of those things is going deep down to the hardware layer and ensures that every flow lands at the same core every time, right?
Exactly. There's that whole zero copy mechanism, and this is the exact same way that all of the IDSs out there basically use this mechanism for balancing their flows.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and I will make sure you get that email so you can go and look at the actual code. Great question.
Well, send it to everybody so I can maybe put some of it in the show notes. And wow, there's a lot here. This is a very dense show.
Bro is so huge. I mean, it is crazy when people start to get into it. I remember when I first got into it, I was just blown away. I was like, I cannot believe all of this stuff is out there. When you start to look at it and you're like, how is this just out there and not everybody's running it? And there really was the Bro 2.0 coming out in late 2011, and it didn't go gold until early 2012. was the real milestone here. That was the net result from that NSF grant that suddenly made Bro really easy to use and incredibly stable because it's built on, you know, 10 different reference platforms every single night, which is, you know, kind of takes it to that next level of software engineering. It's really been a milestone, and that's what I think you've seen this avalanche of interest in Bro over the last few, you know, months, especially, that this is what's been picking it up.
Yeah, so, and I guess I just want to emphasize that Bro can be as simple or as complicated as you are wanting to, or as much time as you have to dedicate to it. As much as you want to make it, that's what it can be. I think that's the most important thing to take away, you know, for the listeners about this about Bro in general.
Out of the box, yeah. Out of the box, you get Bro IDS, which is just the first great application written in the Bro network programming language. It is amazing. It'll give you all these detailed protocol logs. It'll write notices. It'll say, like, you know, we have this whole software framework that you can set the limits on good versions and bad versions of software. And everywhere in other protocols that we can detect software versions, like on the wire from HTTP, we can actually pull out the Java version. From an SSH negotiation, we can pull out the SSH server version. We'll tell you when those versions change, and you can also just configure Bro to warn you and say that, you know, to write out a notice and say that this user has old Java. And in the next version, Bro 2.2, we actually have a new DNS-based mechanism where Bro will call back to our servers and then will download the list of current good and bad software. So you don't even need to maintain that list internally yourself anymore. You just install Bro, and then out of the box, it just tells you all these amazing things about your network. I think that that is exciting. I also want to emphasize that, as Taylor and Ivan have both identified, I think what's more exciting is what is going to be built out of the Bro network programming language in the next coming years.
Yeah,
that,
I agree.
That to me is the most exciting thing out there.
I agree as well. I have a quick question for you, Liam. Knowing and understanding that Bro is BSD licensed, are you aware of any existing commercial applications or appliances that use or leverage components or pieces of Bro today?
Oh, absolutely. I know of at least two companies that sell magic boxes that are actually just a crippled version of Bro.
No, to who?
I know that because I know the developers and I know the people. You know, the Bro community is very small. I don't know that they want other people to know that. So if they want to put that up on their website, I would think it would be great. But I don't, you know, I'm not here to out anybody. That being said, I still think that the, you know, Bro is not... You know, there is room for a Bro appliance, but I think the magic of Bro, Taylor, is to participate in this Bro community where, for example, when the APT1 report comes out, you want to add our APT1 module. And if you have Bro locked away in this little appliance in a corner there, you're sort of missing out on the magic of Bro, which are these little tweaks and customizations that you can do. Maybe Ivan, you want to set your Bro box to download a copy of every executable and save it in a directory as it goes across the wire. That is a two-line configuration in your Bro script. Two lines. There's actually a video up on YouTube. I called it file extraction and HTTP, IRC, FTP, and SMTP. And whenever Bro sees those MIME types that you specify, it'll save it out. You know, when you lock Bro away in this little appliance box and say that it's just for this industry and this environment, you're not really, you know, you're not using Bro to its fullest. So Bro is sort of designed for this commodity deployment, you know, deploying on commodity hardware in this utility fashion. When I need more Bro, I just plug in more Bro boxes. If I want my Bro to be more computationally intensive, to look deeper into the traffic, maybe I move from 250 megabits per second per worker down to a 200 or 150 megabits per second per worker. Well, it's simple. I just order a couple more Dell R710s, and I just plug them in.
Wow. Hmm? Wow. I think everybody here is... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ivan.
Yeah. A question from a lazy person. So it turns out that Bro is actually included in my Fedora distribution. So the only thing I need to get it up and running is yum install.
Okay.
But it's 1.5.1.
Okay. If you just look on our webpage, there's an updated RPM for you.
Thank you.
Bro.org.
Well, I think before everybody's brains start bleeding out of their ears, because there's a lot of information right now that we've got to take in, I think we'll close out, and we'll probably have to do some follow-up with you, Liam, and definitely Ivan. If we actually, especially you have to promise me, if you see anybody start to integrate this in an SDN fashion, you have to come back and talk to us about that.
I will be happy to talk. Yep.
That would be really fascinating. But for now, I think we've had our bro and bromance fill for today. We now return control of the internet to you. Until next time, when the control voice will take you to healthy paranoia, I hope you can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers or hang out with our listeners on IRC at Freenode. Visit PacketPushers.net to read blogs by the growing Packet Pushers Alien Invaders. Subscribe to our RSS feeds, check out the user forum, and donate to the show because hunting UFOs is expensive. Email your comments or questions about this show to PacketPushers@gmail.com or HealthyParanoia@PacketPushers.net. And remember, it's healthy paranoia because sometimes they really are out to get you.